Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Alarmy. Check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
Like, what is that instinct that made you run to the bathroom?
Shame. Oh, 100%. I felt so ashamed. This is like, it was, she was like an older woman too.
Right.
And she had this, like,
you were disgracing her.
She was disgraced. Like, make no mistake. She, like, if she came in with grace, she was disgraced.
Yes.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the 1931 Central China floods. Here's what you need to know. People have settled near rivers for ages because of the fresh drinking water, irrigation, transportation, and natural protection from invaders. And the rivers in China are some of the biggest and most highly populated in the world. These rivers, especially the Yellow and Yangtze rivers, caused many floods throughout history in large part due to their high silt content. The muddy waters have the ability to change course and overflow. In 300 BC, an engineer named Yu came up with a massive public works project to dredge the Yellow River in order to encourage it to stay on its course. Dikes were also built up through the years to control the flow. But in 1931, unusual weather patterns conspired to create a deluge that destroyed the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Chinese citizens. The first event that triggered the devastation was a drought that lasted from 1928 to 1930. These dry conditions caused the rivers to recede and the earth around the rivers to dry up. In the winter of 1930 to 1931, massive amounts of snow and ice accumulated in the mountains, and in the spring, it melted and fed into the rivers. And then the rain came. A particularly heavy spring rain was accompanied by seven cyclones in the summer, In July, the city of Wuhan suffered a catastrophic dike failure, and hundreds of thousands were forced to abandon their homes and seek refuge. On August 25th, a typhoon ravaged the Gaoyou region, destroying an intricate system of dikes and aqueducts that held together the man-made Gaoyou Lake. Water from the lake, which had been accumulating since the spring, surged down on the city below. It is estimated that 10 to 15,000 people drowned that night alone. The devastation continued for months, and the death toll grew larger and larger. Vast fields of vital crops like rice and wheat were destroyed, cutting off subsistence foods for huge swaths of the population. The price of commodities skyrocketed, and many people were forced to survive by eating tree bark and weeds. Aid was slow and limited, and waterborne diseases ravaged the refugees, who were forced to live together in unsanitary conditions. It would be years before China would fully recover. Fun facts, aka death stats. With an associated death toll of over 2 million, the Central China floods are regarded as one of the world's deadliest natural disasters on record. Several million were killed directly or indirectly in the following months, most from flood-related diseases like cholera and malaria. From June to August 1931, the series of floods, rising waters in the river basin area received, and above-average rainfall drove 500,000 people from their homes by August. It is estimated that 52 million people were affected by the floods. The extent of the area actually submerged was 500 square miles, equal to England in size and all of New England. In the last 2,000 years, the Yangtze River has flooded more than 1,000 times.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is our friend David Bly. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you on the show, and I want to tell our friends, the Alarmy, about your, you know, recent life pivot, as well as your new Amaro. So David is the owner and distiller of the Amaro Festif, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, Amaro is just a very niche spirit that is not the biggest name draw in the booze world, but I found that it's just the most exciting. It's the wild west of booze. And for years, I was just experimenting with recipes to have like an at-home spirit for like when we would have dinner parties or whatever. And it's just like a fun thing. It's a DIY kind of thing. And then COVID hit and just leaned more into figuring out the recipes and pivoted away from filmmaking and figured out these recipes and started a liquor brand legitimately, and took a long time to get some licenses. But now I have an Amaro brand. It's called Festif, and there's two varietals of Amaro. One's a classic Amaro and one's a Canadian Fernet with a bunch of botanicals from my native Canada, as well as Brussels sprouts, which has never been used in alcohol before. So it's a very wild niche within a niche thing.
Very
so healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the healthiest of all spirits. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, can you explain to our listeners what is the flavor of Amaro? So, you know, some of us don't
it's like
have
bitter,
aperitifs.
Right?
Exactly. You know? It's Chris nailed it. Amaro is the Italian word for bitter. So it's any type of bitter spirit. So Campari or Aperol are technically like aperitivos. Those are bitter. I make a more classic Amaro style that's just like a floral, herbal, citrusy, baking spicy style of Amaro. That's my classic one. Then I also make this really super esoteric Canadian Fernet that's just full of Quebec spruce tips and balsam fir and chamomile and rhubarb root. So it's very like medicinal and tea-like. But yeah, it's just it's a bitter bracing type of spirit that you would normally have at the end of a meal to help you digest.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And we have to continue talking. We have to. It's what we do in podcasts. So we like to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
Personal or any, like, I mean.
Ooh, I mean, we love personal, but.
You mean like in the macro sense?
Where does your mind go?
What's the first thing you thought about?
Selfishly, just my own things. But I guess I'm about to go back into production on the Amaro. And the last batch, the first production round at the distillery, we made about 550 bottles of each varietal. And this time we're scaling up to about 3,000 of each. And that's
scary.
A terrifying thing. I've never done it. When I did the 550 of each, it was the first time I'd ever done that amount. I'd gone from like 30 bottles to 550. Right. So that was terrifying. Right. And so I'm just trying to gather every single variable under my control. And we've already had so many hiccups. I was supposed to start 2 weeks ago. And
it's a veritable flood of Amaro, wouldn't you say?
Oh, nice, Chris.
Would you say it was a flood of Amaro?
Oh,
she's setting you up for that spike. She.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, we should say there's not a ton of information.
It's a shockingly low amount of information.
At least from how we usually research, which is like just going on the internet and looking for reputable sources and articles and any kind of research in that sense, but not a ton that we found, at least in English.
Right.
Maybe it's possible that it just hasn't been translated for some reason. We're not getting it, but it is such a large scale disaster.
Huge.
I mean, and to then not be able to find as much information is very alarming. Talk about alarming.
Mm-hmm. Within the last 100 years, too. It's not like it's in the 1800s or 1700s.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, talk about something that will keep me up at night. That to me will keep me up at night. These natural disasters that, because, you know, it makes you feel like if it's forgotten, then we're not learning from it.
We should say that we're really on the precipice of a pretty major rainstorm that's about to sweep through California.
Yes.
So this feels like a little raw right now to be talking about, because we don't know. There is like expected flooding and mudslides and damage to come. So this feels really scary to be talking about.
Did you guys get that text message?
Yes.
Yes. Like,
did it already come through?
There's going to be a lot of rain.
Oh, David.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no. Get to high land.
Yeah. Maybe they sent it to some of the most like important citizens first, and then they're sort of doing a round two.
Yeah, not the bootleggers.
For the people. Bootleg alcohol.
Nope.
We get this out to the podcasters
first. Yes, that's right.
Podcasters first.
Front lines.
Yep. They need to spread the word via pod after the floods come.
Yeah. Not even recorded live, but you'll hear about it weeks from now.
In fairness, I'm sure we're like 52nd on the list, and and then Amaro producers are like probably 54th, I guess.
Yeah.
Your text is coming. We've made sure to waterproof all of our sound equipment just for for what's to come. But so this flood, it didn't just come out of nowhere. Obviously, as we know, not only it's natural disaster, you know, it's our scary mix of natural disaster / human
neglect,
exactly, which is terrifying, especially because it is a 20th century, like we said, disaster. You'd think that at this point we would have structures put in place, but
which they did.
That's not which they did, but they just didn't
work. Right.
So let's take it back to the drought, because it all started with a two-year drought that started in 1928 to 1930.
Mm-hmm. So should we put the drought on the board?
Let's put the drought on the board.
Okay.
And this is from jstor.org. Between 1928 and 1931, northern China was once again struck by a major drought that affected a population of 57 million, 12 million of them gravely. The impact was far worse than in 1920 to 1921 because of the struggles among warlords, which cut off rail lines that had been so important in the previous crisis. This is from Science Direct. In Shenbao, on November 12, 1928, they mentioned the following. From spring to autumn, there is no rain. The number of rivers has been greatly reduced and wells and springs have dried up. The summer witnesses poor harvest and there is even no harvest in the autumn. The wheat has not yet been sown. Every family is short of food, but the price of food is rising rapidly. The report did not specify that the lack of rain was the reason for the poor harvest, nor did it specify that the poor harvest was the reason for the rise in food prices. Mm. So we're setting the stage here.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not good for...
There's been a drought. Food is scarce.
Right.
The crop has not come in
right.
the way it should have.
For so, 2 years, too, right? Like right. they're in for a mindset that this could go on 3, 4, 10 years.
Yes. It's very, they're in a vulnerable place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's dry.
And it's dry.
Hard. The ground is hardened. And if you want yes. rain coming at this time, this is when you want a soft, kind of consistent, subtle rain. You don't mm-hmm. want
yeah.
torrents of water coming, flooding in because the yes. earth can't absorb it. Essentially.
Exactly. Right. You're putting the sprinklers on low.
Yeah.
Right. Ideally, if if yes. this is the situation you're mm-hmm. in. But mm-hmm. that's not what happens. Unexpected rainfall. And let's go ahead and put that up on the board.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Suddenly there's this rain, which you can't control. This is from ResearchGate. We find that the flooding in 1931 along the Yangtze River Valley was dominated by July rainfall. Although the rainfall totals in July of 1931 were not the largest in history, ranking second over the past century, the totals exceeded those for many other pluvial years between 1951 and 2010 in terms of its persistence, which was associated with a steady Western Pacific subtropical high. The flooding resulted from the combined effects of tropical El Niño-related SST forcing and extratropical wave activities over the Eurasian continent. On the one hand, warm SST anomalies in the tropical Indian Ocean following an El Niño event led to the southwestward extension. This is all very technical. Southwestward extension of
it's
the
not
WPSH.
Going over my head.
Is it?
No.
It seems
nope.
pretty lame.
No, he's on it. Yeah. He's really
I'm
on it.
I'm absorbing all of this like nice, fertile, not dry land.
SSTs, sure.
Yes, mm-hmm. you know. The
I know
WPSH.
What all those letters stand for.
On the other hand, the southward shift of the westerly jet due to extratropical wave activities prevents the normal northward movement of the WPSH
obviously.
Typical in July, obviously.
So it sounds like things
long
are stuck
story
somewhere.
Short.
Jumping with stuff.
There's I don't claim to be a weather
right.
woman, but it looks like there's a lot of
it's the perfect storm, right?
Storm, yeah, the perfect storm, exactly.
For the storm to just dump a bunch of water and get stuck doing it.
And there are cyclones that occurred during the, not only is there rain, okay, so it's a rainy time after a drought, but they get hit by 7 cyclones.
Wow. Okay, so that's on the board.
And just for comparison, mm-hmm. It says here that usually China has had roughly 2 cyclones in a year, right?
In a cyclone season, right?
In a season, yeah. And like in a normal
summer or whatever
season, it'll get hit by 2.
Right.
This time they had 7 in July alone.
Yeah. Wow. So this is just like a really an anomaly of a year.
Right.
For that.
Yes.
The lead up of the droughts, then the rain.
Yeah.
And then also, and you talked about the accumulation of the snow and ice up in the mountains.
Oh, we haven't talked about that, yes. I mean, we said it earlier, but...
Should we just put Mother Nature, like good old-fashioned Mother Nature on the board?
Mom Nature, Mom.
She's been on the board before. It's not the first time.
It's not her first time. She usually gets away with it because
she's
like moms, whatever.
Never a slap
even? We have
a soft
spot. I don't think she's even gotten a slap.
Wow.
No.
Yeah.
It feels even weirder to slap mom.
Yeah.
Slap mom, yeah.
Right.
Than imprisoning mom.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just like a cycle of unfortunate natural events.
Yeah.
There's the snow. Okay, so the snow happened during the winter. And this is something that I didn't realize, and I mean, God, I didn't realize this. Not only am I a city person, but I'm also like, you know, from the tropics, which snow is not like a thing we deal with. Oh, David, you're from Canada.
You know,
I was raised in it.
Experience.
Yeah.
But moved to California and realized that the way that we collect water is during the winter when we get the snow, and then it, you know, sits on a mountain where snow does up high and in cold weather,
right?
And then when the summer hits, it melts and
trickles down during the dry summer.
Trickles down, and suddenly you have rivers flowing. Mm-hmm. So,
assuming you get the precipitation that you need, otherwise, right, you don't have enough snowpack to actually melt and supply the water, which is probably what was maybe happening in China for a couple of years before this all came,
right? And something we learned about last year, or at least I was interested in last year, was that we had a huge record snowpack. Mm. And we've been having droughts out here, and it's the snow up from the Sierras, right? Mm-hmm. That we like really rely on. And they were talking about how the pace of how the snow melts is important.
Right. Temperature going into spring and summer is very important, because if it's too hot, then it just comes rushing down and then you just get flooding.
Oh, wow.
It's flooding, exactly. As opposed to like, they want just like a little bit of heat at first.
Which we lucked out with last year. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
This is giving me a lot of anxiety, because it feels like we're expecting Mother Nature to be like, well, let's just have
what do you need? I'll give it to you.
You know, don't do it. Not too fast, not too slow, you know, and we can't control that. I mean, as someone who I'm just realizing, David, like as someone who like crafts their own Amaro, mm-hmm, right? So controlled, right? At least that's something you can control. But you can't control like
harvest.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm, yeah.
Now I have to be one of those people who's just like reading almanacs and weather reports to like, is the chamomile supply or the like spruce tip supply? But I think we're more advanced in 2024 than 1931, I think.
For sure.
That's true. And
but 1931 was more advanced than 1880. So
you're right,
there's flaw there.
Mm-hmm. Also, we're much more, 2024 is different than 1930 and 1800s in terms of the greenhouse gases that we've been pumping into our world for decades and decades.
Yeah.
The secret ingredient in the Amaro that I...
yes. The...
CDT.
The blood of humanity.
Oh my God, we can taste it. Oh, I can't wait for a tasting.
That's why it's so bitter.
Yeah.
But we should talk about like what was going on at the time in the area, because I think that this had a huge effect on the flooding. So obviously the rivers start flooding, the levees started breaking, and we're going to get into that.
Right.
But just to give everyone a little bit of context, there was also a civil war happening at the time in China. This is from Barnard College. The death of Sun Yat-sen, the founder of the nationalist movement in 1925, began the bitter struggle for the leadership of the nationalist movement. By 1927, the movement was in utter chaos. The party was divided between centrists in Nanking and the left Kuomintang, who were allied with communists in Hankou. Each of these centers had a military presence supporting their campaigns for revolution. All these attempts at gaining power over China would culminate in the KMT's Northern Expedition of 1927, with Chiang Kai-shek as the leader of the party. The Northern Expedition directly resulted in the Nanking Incident of 1927 and allowed the KMT to establish Nanking as the capital of the Republic of China. Despite this, there was still a lack of political stability. Later in 1927, a civil war broke out between the communist CPC and the nationalist KMT, resulting in the taking of Nanking by communist control. However, in 1928, the KMT regained control over the city under Chiang Kai-shek and named it the nation's capital. This is from the U.S. Department of State. The Chinese Communist Party, founded in 1921 in Shanghai, originally existed as a study group working within the confines of the First United Front with the Nationalist Party. Chinese communists joined with the Nationalist Army in the Northern Expedition of 1926 to rid the nation of the warlords that prevented the formation of strong central government. This collaboration lasted until the White Terror of 1927, when the Nationalists turned on the communists, killing them or purging them from the party.
So there's a lot of internal struggle and not necessarily a lot of attention on infrastructure, basically, is what we're kind of hinting at.
Yes. I mean, I'm curious what the White Terror was. It sounds bad.
I'm going to put this
scary.
On the board, the Civil War.
But there's a lot of conflict, which means that all of the attention is being put on the conflict. And there's also not a centralized government to deal with the aftermath.
Yeah.
Or to just like plan, you know, like part the big part of government is just like planning and supplying basic needs for your citizens.
Right.
So if you're just trying to like, if you're struggling over, if it's a power struggle, then those things are not even on your mind. So basic necessities, you know, like roads and bridges and, I think we talk about like the dredging of the river or whatever, just like not happening.
Yeah.
Because no one's in charge.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. This is like if you're doing like a tag team wrestling and you start to get into a fight with your own teammate. You know what I mean?
The clock's running out.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody?
Is there a river involved in this?
Well,
Where do you swim?
Is the bushwhackers.
The two guys that you're fighting against are the river, right? So you should be focusing your attention on them, but instead you're focusing your attention on your teammate who you slapped you too hard to go into the wrestling ring.
Yeah.
It's a really good analogy, and I'm sticking by it.
We'll share it with our guest expert. I'm sure they're really going to want to use
they're gonna
it.
Agree.
Moving
yeah,
forward. They're going to be like, thank God someone finally enlightened me.
Okay.
So I feel like lack of flood control measures go up on the board, right? Okay. This is the resources they're devoted to the Civil War, the rivers being neglected. And as a result, the Yangtze Basin is taking too long. We'll put that up on the board
to construct.
Okay. Yes. So this is from the China Project. But while nature was an essential element in the floods, it was not the only factor. The transformation of the Yangtze Basin took place over millennia. The Yangtze is not only one of the Earth's longest rivers, it is a site of tremendous biodiversity. Zoologist Anthony Turvey, who has written compellingly about the extinction of the Yangtze River dolphin, called the ancient Yangtze the Amazon of the East, the center of an ecosystem of marshes, lakes, and tributaries, in addition to the Grand Mainstream. Nourished by regular flooding, the river system of south-central China was one of the Earth's most prolific. The China Project also writes, many of the lakes, rivers, and canals in the Yangtze Basin had, by the 20th century, become suspended. Levees built to prevent flooding enable a silt to raise the bottom of the lake or river. This, in turn, raises the surface level, leading to higher levees, leading to more silt, and still higher levees. This is scary to me, and we'll talk about why. Over time, the lake or riverbed can become higher than the surrounding plains.
Right.
If the levee breaks, the entire volume of the suspended lake seeks its level by claiming the entire surrounding plain. This has happened regularly since ancient times on the Yellow River, a process described in a book called The 1937 Yellow River Floods. Okay. So why is this so scary? What is a levee and what is a suspended river? The suspended river is a river that over time, so this has to do, and this is...
Hit us, Rebecca. Okay. We're with you. We're with you.
Okay. The more you try to control the path of a river.
By sort of building the walls on either side and that kind of thing, which
and
are
also
dikes.
By trying to direct water to go different ways and, you know, making sure that the river stays on the path. It always stays because you're building around it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The more you do that.
The more you do that, I guess naturally a river wants to flow and create its own path. And
dance.
And rivers move. They dance.
Yeah.
They
path dance. Of least resistance.
They dance.
Yes, David. Tell if you could only see David's David light up and dance like a river.
Dance like a river is a nice.
The rivers are the Shakira of parts of the world.
Oh my God! Yes,
parts of the
rivers
world.
Are Shakira,
and
okay.
Her hips don't lie.
Yeah.
So
hips
we understand.
Can't, they can't lie.
No, so they can't.
These levees are trying to get the hips.
So
of
they're
the river
trying
to lie.
Contain it, right? Yeah. And so what happens is that, like, the bottom of the river. The more it flows, it continues to, like, I don't know, catch dirt or catch whatever is at the bottom of the
right.
river.
Mm-hmm.
And so that grows and grows and grows. But because as a society, we want to contain the barrier of the river, then we start building levees.
Right.
So essentially it's a river that's almost like above you. Imagine
right.
that. That's very scary.
And you have
a
to
body
clean
of water
out
that's
that.
Above you.
And you have to clean out the sediment so that the water doesn't rise over basically the boundaries that you've built for. Is that?
Yeah.
Right.
And so there's maintenance involved. And also you're hoping and praying that these levees don't have a crack or don't break. And this is what then creates massive amounts of flooding because
right.
it's
right.
already above you. The
right.
water
like
is already above you.
We messed with the river. The river is not doing anything
right.
wrong in this situation. We have altered the nature of it. So, like, you've got to expect that there are extreme consequences if you're not extremely careful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also the name, like, it's like, there's some kind of relationship we have where we need to live by this river because it provides so much for us.
Yep.
And, but it's, and so therefore we create these systems to try to control it. And it just always seems to backfire, or it just doesn't seem to be that easy to be able to do that. Because you just can't control. You just can't control it.
Well, and back then you're not really like you may decide to put in a levee, but you're not anticipating a 7 cyclone season years and years from now.
Right.
That
right.
kind of totally overwhelms this kind of probably antiquated system by the time those things come along.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you want to make things worse. You were talking about a river that's been here for, I mean,
right.
since the beginning of civilization and
way
populations and cities have grown around this
right.
river because it is a economic, you know, source
life force,
and,
yeah.
and a life force. And then all of a sudden, like, these levees are just not the. The river's tired. The river's doing a lot of work.
Levy yeah. that river alone.
Oh.
Sorry. That was so dumb.
God,
Glenn, yeah, they need really dumb. Like, they need maintenance, right? They need
yes.
like
yes.
upkeep. They need just like someone with a clipboard just checking things
yeah.
off and just feeling around, but you've got to like empty out like the Silver Lake Reservoir in Silver Lake, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How, like, every now and then you'll go by and it's just empty. And it's like, where did the water go? Sometimes they
right.
just remove the water, transfer it elsewhere to then do some like infrastructure check.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's a modern yeah. idea.
Right.
Do they do that there? Because it's this is a reservoir versus the Yangtze River, which you can't really,
right.
you know.
Massive.
It's massive.
It's like, it's, what is it? It's the third largest river
in
the
world.
World.
I just saw that, yeah.
David, you're touching on something that we've actually talked about here on the podcast before in previous episodes, which we deemed a rebrand of maintenance because it kind of has a negative on maintenance. It's like such a drag, but
yeah.
we've rebranded maintenance. Like,
fun.
How fun. We should
yeah.
all love maintenance.
Restorative, bringing it back
yeah.
to, it's
yes.
a factory reset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's put a lack of maintenance up on the board.
Mm.
I'll read a quick excerpt here. This from the China Project. By the early 20th century, human activity had reshaped the plains of Hubei, Hunan, and Jiangsu, and surrounding provinces that the floods were now catastrophes rather than essential routines. Dikes, canals, and polders regulated the flow of water, protecting cities and irrigating farmland. While effective in their mission, the new hydraulic infrastructure required maintenance, without which the normal function of the river resumed, now to devastating effect. Marshes helped absorb floodwaters in the past, but over time they were eliminated in favor of more quote-unquote productive uses for land. Whew. The overwhelming volume of the 1931 rains and snowmelt would have caused flooding even without a human presence, but the constrained and domesticated natural network stood no chance against the inundation and in many cases made it worse.
So, nature, gosh, these are tough because they're so big. And you know what it made me think of too is that there should be, you know how they have a terms of service anytime you like sign up for an app or whatever, and they're like, these are our terms of service. They should have one of those for cities. They should be like, oh, you're living in Los Angeles County. Like, these are our terms of service. Like, this is basically what you're getting into.
Right. You're going to die here.
And just talk about, well, I mean, just talk about like not flooding, I guess is not our problem here, but earthquakes. And you talk about all the dangers involved in living in a city, which they just don't, they're not upfront about.
Yes, Chris. I think that's all great for when you're shopping around for a new city. But that you also have to think about like the generations of just people who are like, I am from here.
Right.
This is where this I've is always home. Been.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like, you don't even have that choice to go shop around.
No. Yeah. And I guess I just mean
in a modern world.
Yeah. I guess I just mean like, you know, there should be warning systems in place for every citizen who lives in an area that, oh, that well, can be. That
that's can, for sure.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Because I go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just curious if they do that in like Florida now, where like they're removing insurance policies in certain areas or the Northwest.
You can't get it.
Well, in California you can get fire.
Yeah.
Correct.
Is that
so that's things. A red flag?
Yeah, those are things that like you read a little bit about in the newspaper here and there, and that they like, again, you're totally right. These insurance companies were like are unwilling to take on policies, but you know, you're not like told about these things.
Yeah.
I guess in a sort of like formal way.
I was gonna ask because I feel like Rebecca, maybe we clarify, are we deciding who's to blame for like the death, like the massive death toll
or
is it the actual like flooding in the circumstances itself?
I feel like the flooding, well, I mean, both are big parts of this because perhaps the flooding would have still happened, right? And perhaps the death toll wouldn't have been as high had any of these like men or human-made reactions, you know, or just what happened after. And we should talk about what were the difficulties that occurred after.
Right, because it feels like we've talked a lot about like the natural side of it, but there's a big part of this, which is like all man-made cause, right?
The reactionary stuff.
Yes. I mean, there was the famine, right? Mm-hmm. Which is both, right? Because it had to do with the crops.
Right.
but also the fact that they could not get relief.
Right.
Into these areas soon enough because there was no organized relief project that happened right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And the conditions for many of these like relief camps or these refugee camps were absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So many of the people died of just malnourishment.
Right.
So initially it was like something like 200, they think it was like between 100 and 200,000 people died within like a massive flood. Right. Right.
With just sort of from drowning, right?
From drowning, just from the
event itself. Yeah.
The event itself, which is a lot of people. Yeah. And we're talking about a flood that was the size of New Jersey, New York, Connecticut. Some people say it's the size of the UK. So huge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you were to fly, you know, a plane over it, it would be incredibly huge. So let's put famine and disease up on the board. This is from disasterhistory.org. Whilst famine and malnutrition blighted the lives of flood-stricken communities, disease was by far the deadliest hazard. Widespread population and displacement and the destruction of sanitation systems provided perfect conditions for a number of pathogenic microbes. Even in a country like Republican China, where refugee crises were an all-too-familiar occurrence, the scale of displacement caused by the flood was exceptional. Across the disaster zone, an estimated 40% of the affected population were forced to leave their homes. In southern Anhui, a staggering 61% of the population became refugees. 61%!
Just totally displaced.
Totally displaced. And the people who weren't displaced, many of them were just like in a building. You know, there were reports in Wuhan, where that one of the bigger cities that was affected, where the flood was flooded for mm-hmm. a long time. The first floors were like totally destroyed, so people started moving up. On top mm-hmm. of that, there's no electricity, right? Because
right.
You can't have electricity. And buildings started to collapse because there were so many people that were inside the top floors of the building. So it's not like, this is just for the people who were displaced. Mm-hmm. So it's not even counting those people. I mean,
do we blame or put like somehow encapsulate in the board like a lack of like a international response? You know, like right now, I feel like when there's like major, there's like the Red Cross comes in from like, you know, America and South American countries are helping this nation that's in, you know, peril. Was that happening at the time?
I think there was actually there was an international mm-hmm. response and that was mainly what really helped the communities.
Yeah, but it was slow and it was hard to get, you know, as we remember from like Hurricane Katrina, it's like really hard to get, and Hurricane Maria down in Puerto Rico. It's like hard to get to certain areas. It's just right. like, it's.
So maybe this is also like they were just a victim of the technology of the time. Like, sure. You know, like you can't, but they didn't have
the telegraph systems were down. Electricity was down. Right. Railways weren't.
Communication was probably a disaster.
Available. Yeah. I mean, planes.
Right.
When did planes start? It was like, you know, they're like 30 years old at this time.
Right.
And also, so, if it is on the heels of the Civil War, then it's possible that there's some ally ships and non-alliances correct. With some of that response that we don't know about. If it's perhaps there's a bit of a delay in some yes. of the response, because yeah. I don't know
that's who, correct.
The current government at the time.
Stopped.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of the ships that were coming in with aid were, you know, exactly what you said. It's just being delayed.
Yeah.
And they're not able to get through. And, you know, also these refugee camps were a center for disease. So right. it's like, if you manage to get away and go to one of these relief camps, then you were exposing yourself to like measles. There was one camp where out of 20,249 refugees, 2,476 died in 3 months.
10%.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's
a high
huge.
Percentage rate.
So there's a lot of death happening post
right.
flood. And on top of that, let's put paranoia up on the board.
Okay.
Because this is from ChinaDialogue.net. While some citizens of Wuhan treated displaced people with great generosity, others saw them as a threat to political and economic stability. Mm-hmm. The local military were convinced that communists were using the refugee crisis as a pretext to infiltrate Wuhan. They declared martial law and began patrolling the streets in sampans with mounted machine guns. Anyone suspected of looting or other subversive activities was executed on the spot. But even such draconian treatment could not quell the paranoia, and eventually soldiers expelled refugees from the city center at gunpoint, relocating them to ill-prepared camps on the outskirts of Wuhan, where thousands would die from disease. Mm.
So you're dispelled from your home by a natural disaster. You're forced into a refugee camp. You try and get out of that because it's riddled with disease. And then there's so much political turmoil going on, and you're looked at some kind of like dirty riffraff slash infiltrator communist that you are then forced back into the camp that probably kills you.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a nightmare.
It is.
Rough.
And so they estimate that potentially like 2 million to 4 million people died during this time.
What were people looting? What were they looting? Like, were stores still operating? Like, at that point,
no, it's a great question.
Like, yeah, everything is in demise.
Right.
It's like apocalyptic era at that point. So if there's a can of beans.
Mm-hmm. We put Mother Nature on the board. Should we put Father Time on the board? I only say that because of sexism.
Okay.
But also because I do think timing was a huge part of this. Not only was China, like, you know, you said, sort of embroiled in a civil war, they were also having beef with the Japanese at the time.
Yeah.
And there was also like the Depression was like sort of upon us here.
Right. In
America. And then, you know, that had ripple effects outward. So I just wonder if this was just the worst time for them to experience this anomalous kind of weather disaster.
It's almost like that Murphy's Law. You guys familiar with that? Where it's like anything that can go wrong will go wrong, and it just kind of like starts to snowball. It just feels like this was like everything just stacking on top of each other to create kind of like a truly once in a lifetime catastrophic disaster on all levels.
Yep.
Okay. You want to put that up on the board?
Sure.
Next to Father Time?
Murphy's Law, Father and Mother up here.
Unfortunately, we are running out of Father
Let's
Time.
Let's put Sister Sledge up on the board just to be safe. And Brother, Where Art Thou?
That's
what they were saying.
Out.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? We need some.
Yeah.
Yeah,
kissing cousins. Kissing cousins. I'm sure it happened.
Cousins.
On the
put them up
the...
on the board. That's a good idea.
Well, I feel like we've got all of the family members up on the board. So now we can take a quick break and we'll start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Who's to blame for the 1931 China floods? The drought of 1928 to 1930? Unexpected rainfall? Cyclones? Mother Nature? The Civil War? Lack of flood control measures? the Yangtze Basin taking too long, lack of maintenance, famine, no organized relief, dismal refugee camps, disease, insufficient technological abilities and relief efforts, delayed aid, paranoia, Father Time, or Murphy's Law. It's a big one with a lot of concepts, which is what you get when you deal with weather.
we did this to ourselves.
You know that song, Blame It on the Rain, falling, falling.
That's a loaded song to bring up.
We should put Millie Vanilli on here.
Mm-hmm. We should.
That's what's missing.
Yeah. Just for safety.
Well, you know, I love putting something on and then taking it right off. So let's put Millie Vanilli and then we'll
That's
knock
good.
It off.
That's like when I...
It'll get us started.
Yeah. It's like when I do a to-do
How do you
list
spell it? Millie...
and then I put...
M-I-L-L-I-E, right?
I think it's I-L-L-I. Right? I-L-L-I. And then V-A-N-I-L-L-I. I say that,
You're
and
right,
I have
David.
A poster right behind me. That's like, of course.
Do you?
It's like I'm wearing a shirt that, and my tattoo says Millie Vanilli. So, yeah, I think it's spelled that way. I'm not 100% sure, but I also know that they had nothing to do with this.
No.
The floods. Yeah, we take them off. We take them off.
Yeah.
We'll take them off. They've been through
enough. Enough, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay, what can we start? Maybe we can fold things into each other, like unexpected rainfall and the cyclones. Mm. I feel like the cyclones can fall into the unexpected rainfall, right?
Well, those are two separate incidents.
I know.
Yeah. So,
but maybe you put those two under Mother Nature in this case.
Mm.
Okay.
Because Mother Nature was also responsible for the droughts, and the droughts were a biggie.
Sure.
And I think you can't just isolate, say, oh, no, it was rainfall. Oh, it was the snowpack. Oh, it was the cyclones. I think it was all of that stuff that led to this.
Okay. All so right. Put that all under Mother Nature, the drought as well. The lack of flood control measures, I feel like can be under the Civil War, can be put under the Civil War.
Okay.
Because, I mean...
Well, is it? I mean, they had some flood. They were building these levees. They were normally in normal times cleaning out the like basin of these rivers. They just were delayed because of this. I guess so. Then I guess you could.
Yeah. It was all the delay. Yeah. The civil unrest was what was causing. As well as that's why the Yangtze Basin.
Okay.
Lack of maintenance, that deserves its own.
Yeah, keep that there.
Little section. The famine, no organized relief also falls into the Civil War. Right?
Well, sure. I guess so. I mean, I guess that's
that,
a
like
good
domestic
one.
Relief we're talking about there, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That's sort of like lack of flood control too, right? It's like they don't have they weren't making sure that the pre aspect was taken care of, nor had they focused on the post aspect. So it's
yeah, it's true.
Okay, so the refugee camps that comes after, but also attributed to just how bad it got.
Yeah,
disease. It's almost like disease.
You fold disease into the refugee camps, I think, right?
Yeah, and into. No organized relief, right? Because the as well as famine too.
Into no organized relief?
I think so.
Man, this is really tough because just judging by the scale of this disaster, how could anybody have conceived of a possibility of controlling or the after effects of controlling like what the damage that this thing did. It just doesn't seem possible. So I'm almost like reluctant to blame any reactionary measures that were taken in any way. It just feels very like.
I don't know. I still think that look, you probably couldn't have done anything about the huge unexpected event, right? When of the
nature side
flood.
Of it, yeah,
right.
But I think as a government, it is your responsibility to make sure that your citizens or helped, right? I don't think they had the proper relief.
Yeah, you got it. You have these major things come along. Your job is to mitigate the damage, right? Like it's going, there will be damage that's unavoidable, but it's the preparation that you have pre and like the plans for post are the most important. And without it, it's what exacerbates the like the death toll. Some of it though, to Chris's point, I do feel like it's like there's kind of like a freak nature, like freak accident kind of element to it, where it's like it's so
unprecedented.
It was like unprecedented.
It is unprecedented, and also so like let's say it's unprecedented. So people will still post flood, there will be suffering, and there will be you know. But we're talking about it went from 200,000 to 2 million. That's like
It's pretty crazy.
That's a lot.
It's also like Chris's point about the Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, and just like a lot of the brunt of that disaster affected the lower income communities, And so you had like certain regions of Louisiana and New Orleans that were like higher up on the hill that weren't really as affected, or the damage was like much delayed. And so that's part of, maybe I'm tipping my hand here, of like where my mind is going, but the government, if their mindset is on like protecting the upper echelons of society, they're not necessarily taking care of the infrastructure for the lower income areas. And so maybe the unprecedented nature of seven cyclones instead of two, and the drought and the rain couldn't be predicted or prevented, but they're sort of not really focusing on making the relief camps sustainable right away, which exacerbates the famine, the disease, the paranoia, the fear, the looting, which led to the shooting people on the spot. And it's like,
It's not prioritized.
Yeah.
So then, I mean, that all
that comes under like classism or something, or what do you call that?
Well, this would definitely go to our guest expert. Yeah. I'd be like, we're going to really rely on them for this, but the Civil War could be blamed in part because you have these sort of battling factions for control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, also the implications of where you spend money and how you spend money, those are all political choices in a sense.
Yeah.
And if there isn't like a consensus on that stuff, then nothing happens. Right.
Yeah.
But so, they're all, you could also throw in classism there too. I mean, just, but for, I think to we David's would, point,
let's put paranoia under, like delayed aid. I feel like delayed aid, kind of and insufficient technological abilities. You just can't blame what you don't know.
Right. Feels tough.
Murphy's Law feels like a,
feels like a cop out.
Yeah, that's just kind of a more philosophical.
Now, Father Time.
Father Time.
He, on the other hand.
Douchebag. Deadbeat dad.
Yeah, he's nowhere to be found. I think we just fold Tim into what? We just take him off.
Yeah, well, gets away with it one more time.
Same thing with Mother Nature. I feel like you just can't.
It's too hard, but and you just can't slap her because Mother Nature will do what Mother Nature does.
Yeah,
it's
we
true.
Can't control.
Don't smite the queen. She.
It's true.
Yeah,
not on
she's
record.
Still living, we're her guests.
Yeah,
aren't we?
We literally are her guests for a blip.
So then we're left with the Civil War, lack of maintenance, and delayed aid, which I feel. This is where my head's at. You tell me what you think. I feel like we send the Civil War to the alarmist jail and we slap a lack of maintenance. Because perhaps even if there was turmoil, political turmoil at the time, if they, well, I mean, then maybe we do send lack of maintenance to the alarmist jail. Because if even if there was political turmoil, but they had continued with the maintenance, perhaps things could have been easier. But then what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? This is one of those situations.
And I think the Civil War kind of speaks to more of what was happening after the fact with the lack of sufficient aid, right? Like there could have been a world in which there was insufficient maintenance. This came along and there was no civil war and it was bad, but like everyone kind of got on board and helped people out.
Yeah.
But it was bad. There was a lack of maintenance and there was a civil war. So there was really like torn, the tensions were pulled in other directions that contributed to the even further delayed aid. So I feel like I like the Civil War in jail for that reason.
Wow.
But that's, I do really think this is a guest expert. For sure.
I know. I'm so scared to make a decision here.
Well, you got to go with your heart. You're the alarmist. So you're the one who has to bear the brunt of these decisions.
It's true. It's on your conscience.
Okay. Let us know who we have to harbor a result.
No. What do you think, David?
I'm anti-Civil War all day.
Oh, okay.
As a Canadian raised in a socialist government, then,
you know.
It's the government's responsibility to take care of the people.
Yeah.
Right.
I like it.
Okay. So, I mean, that was my instinct too. I'll call it because you have to, you just got to make it.
Let's hear how it sounds.
All right. Lack of maintenance, you're getting the big slap. The Civil War, you're going to the alarmist jail. And there you go.
Yes.
Stop fighting amongst yourselves.
We've got bigger floods to fry.
Bigger dikes to maintain. Bigger aqueducts to keep clear.
Yes.
Bigger levees to
build?
To build?
We're just going to keep building those levees, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. It's really scary that the more you build the levees and build the dikes, like the more
you
the
need
river
more
just,
of them.
Yeah. More the river's just like, okay, I'll keep going up, up, up.
That feels like a band-aid on a band-aid. That makes me very scared. David, thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us today
for
and helping us get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it was a blast.
In the aftermath, floods impacted the economy as the price of vital commodities skyrocketed. The stress on the land and economy caused many areas to go into famine. It took years for those affected to recover. Disease, including cholera, measles, and malaria, spread across displaced refugee communities. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the death of Kurt Cobain. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.